So quiet. Yeah. Well, good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. It's a little after 10 a.m. It is Wednesday, August 17th, and I want to call our regularly scheduled commission meeting to order. Well, as is customary, we'll take a couple minutes for opening comments. There's so much going on right now that I had a hard time deciding what to highlight. So first of all, I'm sure members of the media have noticed in our packet that we've got our allotment and our budget submissions up for approval. We've spent many months working on this and thinking about and collaborating with staff and each other on what is the best strategy moving forward for the commission, and have come up with a plan that, while painful, is something that we feel is the best way forward. So I'm not going to get into the details of that plan now. If you want to ask about that in the Q&A, we can talk about that at the end of the meeting. Secondly, one of the items on consent is a memo from one of our staff members on the MDU annual report. This is something that I'm highlighting and probably will do so on a regular basis, just because I think it's important work that our staff does to look kind of big picture outside a rate case on a regular basis on the financials of the utilities that we regulate, and just to take a peek at how they're earning compared to what they're allowed to earn and that sort of thing. And so Victor Shook on our staff analyzed the MDU annual report, the gas operations annual report, and I just want to highlight that the company's return on equity was 8.09% in 2015. They're authorized a rate of return of 9.5%. And in digging through the materials, Victor concluded that the company under-earned by $1.2 million, but the under-earning is primarily due to weather. The total usage in decatherms in 2015 was lower than the total usage in 2011, when MDU had 10% fewer natural gas customers, so really indicating that it's weather-related decline in revenues, not something more troubling. And so the net plant and service slash rate base was ended up being higher than the company forecasted during the rate case. So that sort of concludes the look at MDU gas operations for 2015. Again, they under-earned what they were allowed by about $1.2 million, but that seemed largely due to changes in weather. And then my final opening comments are related to the pipeline issue and Dakota Access and some of the conflict that's occurring in that. So I really regret that there's this much conflict over this project. We had a 13-month, very transparent review that our office embarked on that really covered a lot of the issues that protesters are talking about today regarding the route and how it's going to cross the river and the protections in place to assure that the water quality isn't jeopardized. In a lot of the media reports, there's talk about the pipeline going and crossing the river and, you know, threatening that water resource. And I have to remind folks that are listening that this was something very of high concern to the commission. Nobody wants to jeopardize our water resources in this country. I mean, who would want to do that? We all depend on water. And so this was carefully reviewed by us and carefully reviewed by the Corps of Engineers in providing the permits that were necessary to construct this line. So I think it's important to respect everybody's rights in this process, and the protesters have a right to protest. They have every right to disagree with this project. They have every right to oppose this project. But they don't have a right to threaten. They don't have a right to obstruct the workers who are out there trying to do their job, make a living for their own families. They don't have a right to trespass. They don't have a right to create rumors that cause a whole bunch of extra work for the company and other officials and distract from what's really more important. So I really hope that the officials working on this can find a good path forward with the protesters that continues to respect everybody's right and also recognizes that the company has a right to build this project. They have gone through the process and they've received their permit. And the process is well spelled out in law. So if the protesters don't like the process, they ought to go to the source and try to change the laws that govern this sort of thing in our country and in our state. And so this is really, I am not trying to say that they shouldn't be allowed to protest, but they have to do so within their rights and respecting all the other people's rights as well. And I hope that moving forward that approach is able to be found, that the company is allowed to continue to work and to get back to work and get moving forward on constructing the project that they have lawfully permitted in our state. So that concludes my opening comments. Commissioner Christman?
Well, I don't want to downplay what's happening with Dakota Access, and yet I don't want to just sit and reiterate everything you just said, and you said it pretty well. Maybe the only thing I would add is that a great deal of that oil that would go under the river is going over the same water body now in trains, and so there's the potential for an accident there too. And so it's just one thing that seems to be lost on some of the protesters. I'm going to be a little long in opening comments, but because we have 15 motions on grain licensing when a lot of my small town trivia usually occurs, I couldn't be fair to all those towns, so we'll cut it a little short there. So opening comments, a few things. First of all, I'm going to take a little dig at the press because I don't think that the press is giving enough time to what I think is really an outstanding story. You know, we give a lot of time to these guys and the hockey players at UND when they do well. We've got a Babe Ruth team here in Bismarck. I'm not exactly sure how this works. I thought they were 14 and 15-year-olds, but they're called 14U, so maybe it's 14 and under. I'm familiar because one of the families, Connor Hansen and his parents, are good friends of my wife and I. And they just have been a remarkable team. They've been state champions for 4 years in a row. 2 years ago, they were national champions. This year, they're playing, their first game is today in the actual tournament part, but they've been at the national championship and were first in their pool play that ended Monday. Just a phenomenal team, and you know, in these Babe Ruth, you keep having this turnover. It's not the same kids year after year. It's remarkable how they can be this good year after year, and so I'm just lobbying for more media time for those young folks. They're spectacular. The only thing I can think of why they can be so successful year in and year out is a lot of hard work and dedication. So wanted to say that. Secondly, last week, I had a great trip up to Williston, to the NDSU Williston Research Extension Center. And a couple years ago, a 36-inch water pipeline was laid across where they do a lot of their crop experiments. And they decided to make lemonade out of the lemons that they were dealt there and decided to do some experiments on getting that cropland back into good production after it's been disturbed by a pipeline. And so they don't have a lot of results in on that yet, but they've got the first year of results and have learned a lot. And so two big takeaways, because this is going to be a multi-year experiment and try an opportunity to learn. But I want to commend, there was a lot of NDSU people there, but I heard Austin Link mentioned several times as sort of the person who kind of got this going, so I want to really give credit to him and the whole extension service up there for undertaking this. The second group I want to highlight, there were, as we went around in the room and introduced themselves, I wish I'd have been making a checklist. I didn't realize what I was going to run into, but I would say about 15 to 18 different oil and gas companies were represented there that took time out of their schedule and went to learn about what they're learning to try and improve their processes. And I think it's fantastic. They're not required in some order somewhere or as part of some siting project. They just went there to try and learn. And so I really appreciate that. It was a pretty diverse cross-section of our oil and gas industry there. Last thing, something that I worked on for quite a while, but actually my assistant, Charlene Magstead, ended up doing most of the work. But while we have the large number of living commissioners and former commissioners of this agency that are available, I always wanted to get a portrait. And, of course, it was always tough with FERC Commissioner Tony Clark and Congressman Kevin Cramer when they'd both be available at the same time, and then others as well, because there's eight others besides them. And when Commissioner Kalk was chairman of MARC, and we had the regional meeting here, and Tony Clark came as a speaker, and it was on the weekend, so Kevin could be back, it finally gave us the chance, and we got together at the Heritage Center and got a photo. This includes 10, the three of us, and seven other living commission members that cumulatively represent nearly 120 years of commission experience. So if our Vanna White, Charlene, would go up and do the unveiling. But before you do, I want to highlight one other person in the room with us. Is Poppy Mills, our photographer. Thank you for coming over and for all your patience in organizing such a bunch for a photo. So great opportunity, something we've worked on for a long time. Charlene, would you...
And the 811, don't forget.
Gasp.
Ooh.
Ta-da. Great historical moment. And great job, Poppy. Thank you very much.
It's fun.
Yeah, thanks, Poppy.
That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Randy, for working to get that together and make sure everybody was there at the right time. And that was a feat in and of itself. And so,
it was a fun project.
It's a nice piece to have, and we'll be hanging there for many, many years. Okay, I did want to, you mentioned one thing that I forgot to mention in my opening comments about the way the crude oil is being transported without pipelines, and I wanted to make that note because I thought it was interesting. Yesterday on the drive home from work, I heard multiple stories, many of them on North Dakota Public Radio, about how the Obama administration unveiled new rules yesterday aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions from large truck transport, and said that the collectively the U.S. transportation sector, the large trucks count for 20% of the greenhouse gas emissions. It was the largest single category of emitters in the sector, and I noted that pipelines are not one of the emitters of the greenhouse gases and in the transportation sector. And I think that it's really, that's an important piece to remember, especially when one of the claims of the protesters is that they don't want the fossil fuels because of greenhouse gas emissions. Well, you know, we're a long way from becoming independent of fossil fuels, a long way from becoming independent of that. So meanwhile, we're going to continue to use them because our economy depends on them. So what's the best way, what's the most environmentally sound way to transport these products? And that is pipelines. And I think it struck me yesterday with the Obama administration coming out with these new rules targeting transportation sector emissions and the, you know, growing number of protesters out there blocking a project that would reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the very same way. So I just wanted to make that point as well. Commissioner Kalk.
Seems like a lot been said. I don't want to belabor too much, just a couple of reinforcements perhaps. The one is, Commissioner, you set up the discussion about our budget, and I agree with you. I don't want to go into details now, but I will say that in my time in the commission, the review of our budget and reducing the 10% was probably the hardest thing that I've been involved in since I've been here. It was very difficult because our agency has not grown that much since the energy boom. We've been very efficient with using contractors and siting dollars, and we've just done a lot of good things. So when it came time for us to cut that 10%, it was very challenging. And so I want to appreciate my colleagues, the work that we did on that, because, like I said, it was probably the hardest thing I've been involved in. But the way we accomplished it in a general sense is we made a couple of major structural changes. You know, we took some directors and we merged them, and that's a tough call, but that's one of the things that we did. And we've put some programs that we've offered up that we're going to see that plays itself out. But I do think that at the end of the day, with this 10% budget package that we've submitted, if it all plays out like it probably will be, we'll be able to do our job. I think we'll do it more efficiently. And I just appreciate the work my colleagues did on it, and appreciate staff, because there were certainly people's positions that came into play here. So just and for our staff, you guys and gals do a very good job, and I really appreciate that. And as we unfolded our budget decisions, I do appreciate the way it was received. People that were directly involved, I think, were very professional about it, and I will just wait and see how this all plays out. But I just wanted to highlight that budget a little bit. And then just on the last two things, the Dakota Access, I would just put one point out there that, you know, we had these hearings. These groups didn't come to our hearings, so that in itself is disappointing that what they're doing now. But the backdrop that I say is this, is that, you know, my background is natural resources when I worked at NDSU and, of course, a retired Marine. And when I look at these hearings, I look at the natural resources background about making sure we're taking care of our resources, making sure we're able to hunt and fish and farm and all those things. We spend a lot of time with that. And also, I've asked a lot about the emergency response capabilities. And so we've demanded that of the companies and the counties. But the last thing I'll say is that, you know, our country fights wars over energy. And so every bit of energy we can develop at home, whether it's wind, whether it's natural gas, whether it's oil, I think it enhances our country's ability to be secure. So I think there's a backdrop story there, too, that there's many things at play, but also the national security of the country, I believe, is also at play in being to develop this much energy at home. And finally, last but not least, Rancher, it's 10 days till Bison home opener. Just thought we should not forget about that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Already excited.
Me too. Can't wait. Okay, so let's move into the consent agenda. There's a number of items on the consent agenda, and I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thanks, Daryl. Okay, on to the regular agenda. I have three items on the agenda. All of them are pipeline permits. So we'll move forward with the first one. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC 16-inch NGL pipeline, McKinsey County siting application, case number PU-15-694.
Second.
Last October of 2015, One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC filed applications for a corridor compatibility and route permit concerning a 14.4-mile, 16-inch diameter pipeline and facilities for the transmission of natural gas liquids. The project will be located in McKenzie County. The commission held a hearing on this in February. The project will transport Y-grade natural gas liquids. The project will be located in McKinsey County and will be known as the Garden Creek Loop NGL Pipeline. The project will increase the capacity of the Garden Creek NGL Pipeline by 19,000 barrels per day. The above-ground facilities will include three block valves and an inline inspection tool launcher and receiver sites. The total anticipated cost of the project is about $19.5 million. As is the case with all of our projects, One Oak, in this case, conducted a Class 1 cultural resource literature search on the study area and a Class 3 cultural resource inventory on the survey area. They found six cultural resources are present within the survey area, and they will all be but not within the route. The following agencies were contacted by One Oak: U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Department of Defense, U.S. Farm Service Agency, Department of Agriculture and Natural Resource Conservation Agency, the North Dakota Department of Health, the Historic Preservation Office, Game and Fish Department, North Dakota Parks and Rec, North Dakota Land Department, North Dakota Water Commission, McKinsey County Water Board, McKinsey County Weed Board. All the input from these agencies has been incorporated into the project. In last October, the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office concurred with a no significant sites affected recommendation on this project. There are no exclusion areas present within the survey area. There is one area of geological instability. A landslide deposit is located within the survey area but is not crossed by the proposed route, nor their avoidance areas are present within the survey area. One Oak testified that a SCADA system will be installed as part of the project. It will monitor pressure, flow, and temperature continuously at a control center in Oklahoma, and the control center will have the capability to remotely shut down the project. They testified that block valves will also be remotely and manually operable. And One Oak testified that 89% of the project will be located within the corridor designated for the existing Garden Creek NGL pipeline. So with that, this is a loop, just as a reminder to our friends in the media. It doesn't represent a circle. A loop is a term used by the industry that designates a shorter segment of pipeline that is operated in parallel with an existing line. It helps reduce pressure, the pressure drop, and increase the capacity of the system. In this case, the capacity of the system will increase from 74,000 barrels per day to 93,000 barrels per day. And ultimately, this system delivers these NGLs from to either a rail facility in Montana, or they can continue on pipeline south into, I think, the Colorado area. So with that, I think we've covered all the requirements under law, and I support this permit application today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Second, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order in the BOE Pipeline LLC 16-inch crude oil pipeline done in McKenzie County, citing application case number PU-16-94.
Second.
This is for a project that is 41.8 miles of 16-inch outside diameter pipeline and associated facilities for the transmission of crude oil. The project will be located in Dunn and McKenzie counties. We held the hearing on that. The company applied or submitted their application on February 24th, and we held a hearing on this matter on May 11th. I think that hearing was held in Kildare. This is project that will originate at an area custody transfer meter location 8 miles east of Johnson's Corner, North Dakota. The project will terminate at a BOE terminal located southwest of Kildare, North Dakota. And this terminal is connected by pipeline to the BOE rail hub located southwest of Dickinson. So basically, the pipeline will run from Johnson's Corner south to Kildare. It will connect there to another pipeline that runs south to the rail facility owned by BOE outside of Dickinson. Let's see. The maximum capacity of the project will be 165,000 barrels per day, and the total anticipated cost of the project is $55 million. The company conducted a Class 1 cultural resource literature search and a Class 3 cultural resource survey and a natural resource field survey on a 200-foot-wide area centered on the proposed route. They consulted a number of state and federal agencies, and because the project will cross both U.S. Forest Service lands and BLM lands, the project is subject to the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, and the Federal Mineral Leasing Act. The Bureau of Land Management is the lead agency for the project review, and the company is in the process of completing an environmental assessment through that agency, and expects that the BLM will issue a finding of no significant impact. But our permit will be contingent on the federal permits being approved and any contingencies that they require the company as well. In terms of exclusion and avoidance areas, the original proposed project route crossed through potential habitat for the Dakota skipper and endangered butterfly, and the project was rerouted to avoid impacts to the potential habitat for the Dakota skipper. It's not allowable for companies to impact exclusion areas, and habitat for endangered species is an exclusion area. Fencing will be installed to prevent accidental disturbances of identified potential habitat adjacent to the project, and where one section of the route borders Dakota Skipper habitat located on both sides of the route, the section will be bored to minimize environmental impact, so that effectively does not impact that exclusion area. There are no other exclusion areas present within the survey area. Several avoidance areas are also found in the project area. The Little Missouri grasslands and U.S. Forest Service lands are two of those, and those will be addressed, as I said, by those agencies. The route will cross the Little Missouri River, which has been designated a state scenic river, which is an avoidance area. And since the Little Missouri River stretches from near the southwest corner of North Dakota's border with South Dakota to Lake Sakakawea, there's no reasonable alternative to the proposed route crossing this avoidance area. The company testified that crossing will be bored in order to protect the integrity of this avoidance area, and it will be bored at an estimated depth of between a minimum of 20 feet below the river channel to as deep as 60 feet. The company also testified that cultural monitors will be present during earth-moving activities and cultural resource sites will be buffered by 50 feet on state and private land and 100 feet on federal lands. An inadvertent discovery plan will also be developed to identify procedures for any additional finds that are uncovered during the construction process. Again, that standard operating procedure, all of our permits require that they have inadvertent discovery plans in place to deal with any discoveries that are made when they're digging through the earth and come upon potential archaeological resources. The route crosses through an area that is very landslide prone. During construction through the landslide areas, a combination of sandbag, foam trench breakers, and foam trench breakers will be installed in these unstable areas to limit the saturation pressure from the trench, which will minimize the risk of potential landslides in the area. In terms of impact of woodlands, wetlands, and wooded areas, BOE will bore the wetlands and water bodies, and no permanent impacts to them are anticipated. They will also bore woodlands and woodlands and wooded areas to the extent possible to avoid impacts to those areas. They testified that a supervisory control and data acquisition system, or SCADA, will be installed as part of the project. Operations will be continuously monitored by a control center in Bismarck. They testified that 100% of all field welds will be tested, and they testified that the project includes 87 bores that will cover 21% of the route, so the company's taking those efforts to minimize impacts and minimize potential dangers from the landslide areas. BOE testified that a third-party construction inspection group will be on-site to include environmental and cultural monitors. So with that, I think that covers the highlights of our review and some of the components of this order. This basically, just as in a nutshell, begins at an intersection of a number of pipelines that are coming off the reservation number gathering lines. It will complete a fairly lengthy transmission line project that starts in McKenzie County and runs south through Dunn County and ends in Stark County at a rail facility. They expect, according to the application, to start construction in the spring of 2017 and hope to have it operational by November of 2017.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And my last item, I move the Commission adopt the order on recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Plains Terminal, North Dakota, LLC, 24-inch crude oil pipeline, McKenzie County, citing application case number PU-16-140.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. On March 28th, the 26th Plains Terminal filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a 3.5-mile, 24-outside diameter pipeline and associated facilities for the transmission of crude oil. The project is to be located in McKenzie County, North Dakota. This project basically is a 3.5-mile connector that will originate at the Plains Johnson Corner Terminal, east of Johnson's Corner, North Dakota, and will extend to the northwest to terminate at the Dakota Access Pipeline Johnson's Corner Terminal facility. So basically is transferring crude oil from the Plains Johnson's Corner Terminal to the Dakota Access Pipeline. At the public hearing, Plains testified that the a 16-inch diameter pipeline will meet the needs of the project instead of the 24-inch, so they anticipate constructing with a 16-inch pipeline. The maximum capacity of the project will be 150,000 barrels per day. The average daily capacity will be about 50,000 barrels. It will be designed, constructed, operated, and maintained in compliance with the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 49, Part 195 Hazardous Liquids Pipeline Safety Regulations, as all pipelines constructed in North Dakota are required to be. And the total cost of the project is estimated to be $5 million. There are they consulted with a large number of state and federal agencies. There are no exclusion areas in the survey area, and there are no avoidance areas in the survey area. They will have 24/7 monitors on this line detecting pressure, flow, and temperature, and it will be monitored by a control center in Midland, Texas, and they will have the ability to remotely shut down the project as well. So with that, again, this is one company taking advantage of the and anticipating the possibility of having the Dakota Access to transport there and export the crude oil out of state, and developing a relatively short connector system for that purpose.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Okay, RC1, I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in Public Service Commission versus Quest Corporation, complaint case number PU-15-677.
Second.
On April 6th, PSC advocacy staff filed a complaint against Quest Corporation alleging 28 quality of service instances for failure to test and or correct trouble promptly and or for failing to provide adequate quality of service. The advocacy staff asked the commission to find Quest in violation of North Dakota Administrative Code and asked the commission to impose an appropriate civil penalty up to $5,000 for each instance. The advocacy staff also asked the commission to order Quest to take reasonable and necessary remedial action to provide adequate service. The commission found the complaint, state Suprema Facie case, and served the complaint on Quest. Quest's answer was filed on May 23rd. A public hearing on this case is scheduled to begin December 12th of 2016 at 8:30 a.m. in the commission hearing room here. And the issues to be considered at the hearing are whether Quest is in violation of North Dakota Administrative Code for failing to promptly correct trouble in each of the 28 instances. Number two, whether the commission should impose a civil penalty of up to $5,000 for each violation. Number three, whether the commission should order Quest to take reasonable and necessary remedial action to provide adequate service, and if so, exactly what action should be required. And lastly, whether the commission should impose any other relief that it finds just and proper, and if so, what relief should be imposed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I maybe just add that this is significant. Once again, I've been in the commission almost 8 years, and we've never had one of these in my time here. And the commission's jurisdiction on whether wire phones or wireless phones has continued to be decreased over the years. We really have no jurisdiction on, you know, the Verizons and AT&Ts in the world, but we certainly have a touch on Quest and some of the companies that are work with them. So this today we found that a prima facie case before. I'm looking forward to this hearing, but this is significant that our staff would recommend that this be moved forward to a hearing. 28 potential violations, so it'll be I think a very interesting hearing to see how this all plays itself out, because this is one of the last areas that we really have a regulatory touch on telecom. So I'm looking forward to a good hearing and hearing both sides of the argument.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission execute a contract with Martin Construction Incorporated in the amount of $89,300 for construction services for the 2016 Bowman Foxhole AML Reclamation Project.
Second.
By the way, for anyone new here, AML is Abandoned Mine Lands. The 2016 Bowman Foxhale project Fox Hole project involves the excavation of earthen materials from spoil to backfill two final pits and to eliminate steep high walls. The two pits are separated by a county road that happens to be located on the county line between Bowman and Slope counties. The ML division estimates that about 40,000 cubic yards of earthen material needs to be excavated to reclaim the 10-acre site. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were used. The bid opening was held on August 2nd, right here. 10 bids were received. The low bid was received from Martin Construction Incorporated of Dickinson in the amount of $89,300. The other nine bids ranged from just under $95,000 to over $266,000. The ML division's cost estimate for the project was $184,500, so this is almost $100,000 under estimate. The notice of intent to award a contract to Martin Construction was sent to all bidders on August 3rd. None of the other bidders appealed the intent to award, and a contract was sent to Martin Construction on August 11th to execute. We have received the signed contract, performance and payment bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and the other materials that we requested. The reclamation work at the Bowman Foxhole site is expected to begin in late August or early September and be completed by mid-October.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Maybe just add that I know Jim has already thought of this, but we've previous experiences where our staff estimate has been much different than the final bid. We've had some problems, so I'm sure Jim is going to make sure that they know exactly what it is they're required to do, so we don't have the problems we've had in the past.
And there has been some follow-up, and we've used Martin Construction in the past. They've had bids and have done nice work, so we're feeling pretty good about this one.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion approved.
RC3, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-546, granting the request of Dakota Ag Synergy, LLC, of Linton, North Dakota, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota.
Second.
Dakota Ag Synergy was established this year and projects it will purchase 100,000 bushels of grain annually and filed a $50,000 surety bond. Mr. Brandon Sen notified the commission that Dakota Ag Synergy is comprised of two members. He is one of them, along with another individual. And Dakota Ag Synergy had already purchased one truckload of grain from Sen Farms and Seed, which is a farming corporation that Brandon Sen is the sole owner of. So they did get a little ahead of themselves there. But Dakota Ag Synergy asked that the license application be approved as soon as possible. I did sign a temporary license on August 4th, and statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that the license be issued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion approved.
RC4, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-548, canceling roving grain buyer license number 3210, issued to Kelly J. Westby Trucking, and ordering that business in North Dakota is discontinued effective August 1st of 2016.
Second.
On July 21st, the commission received notice from Kelly Westby Trucking that it does not wish to renew its license. Mr. Westby has accepted a position with another grain business and will not be operating as an independent roving grain buyer. Staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion approved.
RC5, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-563, canceling warehouse license number 1227, issued to Lone Prairie Grain Incorporated at Tunbridge, North Dakota, and ordering the business at Tunbridge is discontinued effective August 1st, 2016.
Second.
On July 14th, the commission received a request to discontinue business from Lone Prairie Grain for this warehouse at Tunbridge. Lone Prairie Grain informed the staff that it did not receive any grain since it renewed its license for the August 1st, 2015 through July 31st of 2016 license year. Tunbridge is empty and there are no outstanding storage obligations, so staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
We can't forget that Tunbridge is just a little west of Rugby either, just for the record.
And a great little town.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion approved.
RC6, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-564, canceling facility-based grain buyer license number 2063 issued to CHS, that's Cenex Harvest States, Incorporated at PSIC, North Dakota, and ordering that business at PSIC is discontinued effective August 1st, 2016.
Second.
We received a request from CHS to discontinue licensing at the facility in PSIC. Staff, and they notified staff that it's no longer operating the grain side of its business at PSIC and therefore is not renewing its license. All grain has been removed from this facility, and staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC7, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-574, canceling grain warehouse license number 1217, issued to the Arthur Companies Incorporated at Buffalo, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Buffalo is discontinued.
Second.
We received a request to discontinue business from the Arthur Companies for its facility at Buffalo. There are no outstanding storage obligations at Buffalo, and the facility has been sold to and will be licensed by Anchor Ingredients Company, LLC, and staff recommends that the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
This one, RC8, is somewhat connected to RC7. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-571, granting the request of Anchor Ingredients Company, LLC, to operate a 462,000-bushel grain warehouse at Buffalo, North Dakota.
Second.
Anchor Ingredients filed a license application to operate this warehouse at Buffalo. Anchor Ingredients processes a number of different products and is part-owned by the Arthur Companies, which had the license on this facility before. Anchor Ingredients notified the commission it has not operated as a grain warehouseman at this location, so staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC9, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-572, acknowledging the expiration of roving grain buyer license number 3208 on July 31st, 2016, and the automatic discontinuance of business of BP and Sons Grain and Storage Incorporated as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota on August 1st, 2016, for failing to file the required license renewal in a timely manner.
Second.
Second.
Our Century Code provides that an annual roving grain buyer license obtained from the Commission expires on July 31st of each year. In late May, the Commission mailed a license renewal application due to BP and Sons Grain and Storage. In early July, the Commission electronically mailed a reminder that a license renewal application had not been received. A license renewal application has not been filed yet, and so staff recommends the Commission adopt an order acknowledging the expiration of the license on July 31st and the automatic discontinuance of business on August 1st.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC 10, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-573 acknowledging the expiration of roving grain buyer license number 3201 for July 31st, 2016 and the automatic discontinuance of business at Annie's Incorporated as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota on August 1st, 2016 for failing to file the required license renewal in a timely manner.
Second.
Basically similar to RC 9, in late May, we mailed a renewal application to Annie's Incorporated. In early July, electronically mailed a reminder. A license renewal application was not filed, and so staff recommends the expiration of the license and the automatic discontinuance of business.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? And see none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC 11, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-581, canceling warehouse license numbers 1226, 1295, and 1296, respectively, issued to Lone Prairie Grain Incorporated at Maddock, Drake, and Martin, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Maddock, Drake, and Martin is discontinued.
Second.
Lone Prairie Grain is leasing these grain warehouses to BTR, Farmers Cooperative, and BTR filed license applications, so that will be coming up. There are no outstanding storage obligations, and the grain inventory in the warehouses will be purchased by BTR. Lone Prairie asks the request to discontinue business be approved, effective as soon as possible. So I did sign a temporary discontinuance on August 5th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC 12, and this is the follow-up to that, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-576, granting the request of BTR Farmers Co-op to operate a 326,000-bushel grain warehouse at Drake, North Dakota, a 265,000-bushel grain warehouse at Martin, North Dakota, and a 640,000-bushel grain warehouse at Maddock, North Dakota.
Second.
So these grain warehouses are being leased from Lone Prairie Grain, who filed a discontinue business request. As you recall from the previous motion, BTR operates a licensed grain warehouse at Leeds and Niles already, and with the addition of these warehouses, we'll have a combined capacity of 5,264,000 bushels. BTR has a $1,205,000 surety bond on file with the commission. BTR notified us that it has not transacted business as a warehouseman at these new locations and asked that the applications be approved as soon as possible. So I did sign a temporary approval on August 5th. Statutory compliance has been met and staff recommends that the licenses be issued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will just say before you call the roll, I said very little trivia today. And, you know, Drake is such a special little place, and I think most of us are probably aware that Drake, North Dakota, was at the epicenter of a media firestorm back in 1973 when the school board censored as obscene the book Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut and Deliverance by James Dickey. But what I think is less known is the fact that that's not the end of Drake being connected to literary giants, because I don't think most people realize that Drake was mentioned as one of the places where the circus stopped in Horton Hatches the Egg by Dr. Seuss.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Moving along, RC 13. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-578, canceling grain warehouse license number 1007 issued to Stone Mill Incorporated at Richardton, North Dakota, and ordering the business at Richardton is discontinued.
Second.
Stone Mill has created a limited liability company and will operate its warehouse under that LLC. Stone Mill, Inc. has no outstanding storage obligations, and staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
RC 14 is the successor to RC 13. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16S580 granting the request of Stone Mill, LLC to purchase a 467,000 bushel grain warehouse to operate a 467,000 bushel grain warehouse at Richardton, North Dakota.
Second.
On August 4th, Stone Mill LLC filed the application to operate this warehouse. It was, as I mentioned previously, licensed by Stone Mill, Inc. Stone Mill LLC is a certified food-grade processing facility. They'll buy grain from local producers for small specialty markets, including organic. Stone Mill has various food-grade certificates, which allow the company to move the products into the food-grade industry without further processing. Stone Mill has not transacted business as a grain warehouseman in North Dakota. Statutory compliance has been filed, and staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion approved.
RC 15, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-583 granting the request of American Bean LLC to operate a 120,000 bushel grain warehouse at Hamilton, North Dakota.
Second.
Hamilton Bean of Oslo, Minnesota is establishing this license at Hamilton to receive dry edible beans. American Bean operates dry edible bean warehouses at Cummings, Grand Forks, Petersburg, Sharon, and Webster. And with the addition of Hamilton, American Bean will have a total licensed capacity of 1,468,000 bushels. American Bean has a $578,500 bond on file and has notified the commission it has not transacted business as a warehouseman at this location. Statutory compliance has been filed, and staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
RC 16, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-585 granting the request of Twin Rivers Grain LLC of Sartell, Minnesota to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota.
Second.
Twin Rivers Grain projects it will purchase 100,000 bushels of grain annually in North Dakota and filed a $50,000 surety bond. Twin Rivers Grain notified the commission it has not operated as a roving grain buyer in the state, and statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that the roving grain buyer license be issued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And this last is a little bit different than the other grain ones. RC 17, I move the commission under North Dakota Century Code Section 60-02-09.1 adopt the order suspending warehouse license number 1063 of Flasher Farmers Union Grain and Oil at their Flasher, North Dakota warehouse effective August 6, 2016 for lack of adequate bond, and issue a notice of opportunity to be heard in case number GE-16-587.
Second.
So the grain warehouse bond for Flasher's Farmers Union is scheduled to expire on September 6th. The North Dakota Century Code requires that unless the warehouseman files a new bond at least 30 days before liability ceases, the commission, without hearing, shall immediately suspend the warehouseman's license, and the suspension may not be removed until a new bond has been filed and approved by the commission. As of August 5th, which would be the 30 days, no replacement bond was filed. I checked this morning, and as of today, still no replacement bond has been filed. Flasher Farmers Union has until September 6th to procure and file an adequate bond or submit a written request for hearing. If a bond is not filed by September 6th, the suspension will remain in place, and the commission will start the license revocation process.
Do we have a motion, a second, and there further discussion?
Randy, on this one, have staff heard from the company?
I'll let Sue respond to that. I'm not sure this.
Has there been any communications with the company direct, like as to what's going on?
They are working with a new accounting firm and working to submit their financials, and there have been delays there. But what they've indicated is that they have every intention of getting a bond back in place and getting their license operation.
Okay. And they understand the provisions of their restrictions now moving forward without it?
Yes, it was provided both to the manager and to the board president.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Madam Chair, 17 items in my portfolio certainly, I would say, puts me on the top platform as a gold medal winner for the most agenda items today. And I think it's the judges are still evaluating. I'm not sure if this is a world record for the North Dakota PSC or what.
Well,
just thought I'd point out 17. This is quite a feat.
That is quite a feat, and not to take away from it, but I was noting how many I had on consent that I could move over to the regular agenda. Maybe we could talk about maybe some of these could be moved over to consent.
Not a fan.
All right. Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Kalk?
I just think back to Jim McMahon, who won one Super Bowl, but it was a good one, and the Vikings that won many times and lost. So just because you have a lot of items, I mean, just one big one might offset. Anyway, all right, thank you, Madam Chair. I have three items today. Excuse me. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the consent order in Public Service Commission's Rock Solid Excavating, Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number GS14633.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. A little background here. In July of 2014, so a little bit dated, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from WBI Energy Transmission, Inc., alleging a violation of rock solid excavating of they violated North Dakota Century Code. Rock Solid is a corporation based out of Park City, Montana. They are registered to do business in North Dakota. And, of course, WBI is a major pipeline player in the state of North Dakota. A little background here. When our staff did the investigation, they concluded that Rock Solid personnel did not provide an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call Center before beginning their excavation to install a water line in Whitetail Circle in Williston, North Dakota. While installing this line, they hit a 12-inch natural gas transmission line owned by WBI, and the amount of damage was $5,500. There was no agreement. It was not being made a time of emergency. What we have today is a consent order. Basically, Rock Solid is waiving their right for further proceedings and willing to pay a fine of $3,000 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission, which, of course, goes to the general fund when they do pay this. This has been a back and forth between our staff as well as the company for quite some time, and I'm glad that they were able to work this out. But also, I do appreciate WBI being very aware of what's going on around their facilities. In this case, no one was injured, but it was a 12-inch natural gas transmission line. And we talk about pipelines and installing them correctly and making sure they're operated correctly, but I still go back to the biggest reason that pipelines fail is third-party damage. So I appreciate our staff's work on this. I do believe this consent order is appropriate, and everything appears to be in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in Public Service Commission Phoenix Construction Damage Prevention Enforcement case number PU15166.
Second.
Thank you. In April of last year, the City of Bismarck filed a third-party damage complaint alleging a violation of North Dakota Century Code by Phoenix Construction. Our staff this year filed a formal complaint alleging that the violation of North Dakota Century Code by Phoenix. We served the complaint on the respondent, and the respondent wants a hearing. Or I shouldn't say they necessarily want a hearing. They failed to reply back to our paperwork, so we're going to schedule a hearing sometime in October. We can schedule it on scheduling today. A little background on this case, quite honestly, is this is the case that we talked about some time ago where the city of Bismarck found out that they had one of their facilities basically that was leaking. And the staff basically, looking for my exact paperwork, so I don't have to go from memory, but basically the staff concluded that Phoenix Construction was doing some work and they hit the city's facilities, and they basically covered them back up and didn't notify anyone. And so when the city found this out, of course, they knew who had been doing the work. They filed the complaint. Our staff basically did the work on this, and this is what we're going forward to hearing. What's a little bit different about this one is that the staff is recommending, which we have the ability to increase their fines to $25,000 per occurrence or, of course, nullify them. But in this case, staff is recommending $1,000 because there was no ticket and there was damage, but they're recommending a fine of $10,000 because the company hit a structure and did not notify anyone. So that's the part that I think that staff is very forward-looking at what they're doing in their recommendations. So we'll look forward to getting the hearing set up in October and continue the appropriate enforcement of North Dakota Century Code.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And last but not least, item BK3, I move the commission issue a notice opportunity for hearing in Northern State Power Company's 2015 Power Purchase Agreement Costs Compliance Case Number PU16458.
Second.
In June of this year, NSP filed a compliance filing in accordance with Section IB1 of the Comprehensive Settlement Agreement and Case Number PU12813, the Excel rate case that we dealt with for quite some time. And one of the things that came out of that rate case that Excel needs to true up with us once a year any of their purchase power agreement costs dealing with less than 50 megawatts in size that they've included in their fuel cost driver rider from the previous year. So during the rate case, we basically tell them if it's 50 megawatts or more, they come into us. If it's less than that, they do this true-up filing so we can look at the costs. The issues that we will consider in the hearing, potential hearing, is the power purchase agreement, a least cost resource, and is there other relevant information the commission should consider? Anyone requesting a hearing must do so by October 3rd. Otherwise, the commission can deal with this in an informal. One thing that I would note is that the PPA adds approximately, power purchase agreement cost for this past year adds approximately 0.0001 cents per month to the bill of the average resident customer using 750 kilowatts. So, you know, quite honestly, this is a very, very small number. But I would note that in our staff's recommendation that's already been filed with us, they're basically recommending to us that we reject this because the staff recommendation does note that this cost is not significant, but it is a cost that was incurred by Xcel Energy adding a 0.718 megawatt solar facility to one of the facilities in Minnesota. And staff goes through and says this is not least cost resource. This is not consistent with what the commission has said. So I do look forward to the hearing on this, but I just wanted to highlight that even though it is a very, very small cost, it is a cost, and we will certainly go through and do the due diligence, but I wanted to highlight staff's concern on this and appreciate the due diligence that staff does, that whether it's 0.0001 cents or millions of dollars, they're going to tell us what they think is appropriate, and this is the first time that we'll have had a informal on something like this, and I do look forward to it and the precedents that we will set with whatever decision we make in this case.
We have a motion and second. Is there further discussion?
I just want to compliment staff on bringing this forward. It does seem like a small matter, and it'd be easy to kind of ignore it because the costs aren't cumulatively all that high for customers. But if I look back to the last rate case, this is precisely where we got to. One of the big issues in that case was a whole series of these riders that were added for small projects that cumulatively added up to more than $5 million in impact to North Dakota customers. That triggered this requirement that they come to us, and before these are automatically added into the customer bills, and this is exactly the kind of discussion we need to have with the company so we don't get in the same position where we've got $5 million worth or more of costs that kind of snuck into the bills, and we're just you know, not scrutinized when they were originally approved.
Is there any further discussion?
Not on this item, but I want to just let my colleagues know. Item BK4 was withdrawn just because there's been some route modifications, so we'll see that again the next meeting. It was nothing significant, but we weren't quite ready to put it on for this meeting.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Koch. All right. That concludes our items on the regular agenda. Don't have any major announcements, so we will just move right on into any questions from the audience.
I just wanted to clarify about Quest, now CenturyLink. I suppose that they haven't changed the name.
I think for our filings, it's still under Quest.
What specifically? Do you have specific examples of trouble they did not respond to?
I don't have that list in front of me. We held a work session on it some time ago when we deemed the prima facie case, but it's primarily issues in some of the kind of rural areas that they serve. As I recall, there were a number of them around the Belfield area where we just received an inordinate amount of consumer complaints and followed up on them.
Dave, you could talk to Stacy.
Stacy.
She's got all the details on the complaints going back probably a year and a half or longer on where the problem areas have been and what's been done to try to resolve them.
You guys kind of alluded to budget stuff beforehand. I wonder if you might be able to kind of outline that a little bit further.
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. So when we went into this process after the governor's budget request, we basically identified three goals. Reduce the general fund by 10%. Obviously, that's goal number one. Minimize the impact the reductions will have on the services provided to North Dakotans as a whole from this agency. And then, if possible, improve the structure and the operational efficiency of the agency. So with those goals in mind, we took a hard look at what we do. Just as the governor said, look at what you're doing and ask if there are things that you shouldn't be doing anymore or can do in a different way. And, you know, as Commissioner Koch talked, in a tight agency, there's only so much you can cut back on the operational dollars and the staffing and continue doing everything that you're currently doing. We decided that wasn't possible to continue to find $750,000 worth of savings and keep doing everything the same. So we looked at our various programs and identified the licensing areas as the area where we're going to recommend significant changes in how we operate and what we do here. So we're basically proposing in our budget to eliminate all the three current licensing positions and creating one new position. And the one new position would complete a significantly streamlined version of what we currently do in licensing. Then to manage that and some of the other things with the agency, we eliminated one of the director positions in PUD. We had two director positions. We eliminated one of those. The one position that is on economic regulation, and we have significant siting dollar application fees that the companies provide when they apply for a rate increase. We get significant dollars with those applications with which to hire outside expertise. And so we decided that we'd have to use those dollars to hire outside expertise instead of the in-house expertise as much. Eliminated one position there and reorganized the agency with a new division. So we're creating a compliance division that will oversee the licensing work. It will oversee the rail safety program, and it will oversee weights and measures. So that basically highlights the major structural changes and reductions. In addition to that, we eliminated the weights and measures temporary positions that the legislature provided in the last budget. That was not one-time funding. So we eliminated that. We continued the operating changes, the reductions in our operating budget that we proposed for the initial allocation. And we are proposing to reduce the specialized legal services fund by about $56,000 in general fund dollars. So that basically accounts for the total reduction of about $750,000 in our budget.
For anybody that's newer here, PUD is Public Utilities Division.
Yeah. So basically, just to summarize, the commission would then have the Public Utilities Division, Compliance Division, and Reclamation AML. So we'd have three main divisions, plus our general office support division.
If I could add, too, in addition to the budget 10% reduction that we're submitting, we actually have three packages that we're also going to submit, the things we want to plus up on, if you will. One is to reinstate the full legal fund. The other would be to basically one of the rail positions is a temp position to make that full-time. And the third alternate package that we're going to put in is to add an additional pipeline inspector. So we've submitted the 10% reduction package as required, but we also identified three areas that we'd like to plus back up. So as this thing churns and burns through the legislative process, it wasn't that we just submitted the 10% reduction and that's it. We did look at things that we think that we might need to enhance what we do, to improve what we do, and so it's a multi-layer approach that we've submitted.
And on those option requests, those are not all general fund dollars. So, for instance, the rail is not a general fund. That's a special fund program. And the pipeline safety inspector would not be all general funds. That has a cost share with the feds. And the specialized legal services fund is not all general fund dollar requests either. That's a match with federal dollars.
I guess also kind of on that note, how did you guys kind of come to the decision on these this recent round of cuts? I had the it says salaries the operating yeah the allocation.
The most recent.
Yeah, the nearly 200,000. How did you guys kind of come to these decisions?
Same way. Looked at everything that we're doing. We looked at where we could, you know, where we are currently in the biennium in our budget, and what areas have some additional funding and the salary lines in the operating lines, looked at our specialized legal services fund, and just tried to estimate how much we might need and where we could cut back. And so that's basically what we did for this more immediate round of allocations.
Is that keeping a position open, or is that eliminating a position or positions or anything?
Say that again.
The 47,000 plus or whatnot, is that eliminating anything, or is that keeping something open? Or
that's an area where we're still deciding. We know we need to save that much there, and we haven't completely determined exactly how we're going to do that.
Right. And the litigation, whatever, that's the main one, that's kind of the
the specialized legal services fund?
Yeah, that's yes. Kind of just estimating what you guys are going to need. You said kind of estimating what you guys are going to need.
Right, right. We used some of those dollars to fight some of the federal lawsuits and also mm-hmm. for the grain insolvency mm-hmm. cases. That's used sometimes to help offset the legal costs of those.
Oh, you got any questions?
I'm good for today.
just one other thing. The bids for the AML project came in quite low compared to what were estimated. Are you seeing for lack of a better term, the reverse inflation now that the Department of Transportation is talking about? They're able to do it more with less because bidders are more competitive?
Well, you know, I always like enjoy coming to these things and sitting with the construction companies and going through that process. And I was surprised, you know, because it wasn't just this one that came in abnormally low than the other. The second lowest was just a little over $90,000. And there were a whole bunch of them that were under what we were estimating. Is this did we just kind of overestimate on this one project maybe? I suppose you could argue that, but I do think that you are seeing that. A lot of these types of construction companies are looking for work and bidding very tight. And you know, we've heard that from DOT. I've heard that from other places and other circles outside of state government. So that is certainly my impression, and I don't know if Jim has anything to add to that, but that's certainly the impression I get. Also, fuel costs are down, too.
One other thing on these pipeline projects, what's the construction deadlines on construction timelines, I guess, on these? I think you mentioned on one of them. I didn't know if you had them on all three.
We can dig that up. I think the Plains Terminal is working this year, and the One Oak as well, and the BOE is the one that is constructing next year. But we'll dig those out. Is that right, Sarah? You're nodding. We'll get more details on each one of those. And I think some of those construction timelines are in flux. But yeah, I don't think we put that in the news release. But anything else?
Yeah, one other thing: RC7, RC8, the Arthur companies.
Sure.
Are we talking the Burgum family?
We are. Yes, and I think I mentioned, is it Anchor? Or I don't have that in front of me. The new licensee, that is partially owned by Arthur Companies, so it's not necessarily a huge change, I don't think, but just more of a technical change.
All right.
Oh, just one kind of quick observation. Just your guys' picture is just a little crooked.
You trying to imply something there, Nick? You just saying?
I know. I
be helpful.
You're one of those people, huh? You walk into the room and straighten up crooked pictures.
Or maybe the crookedness of the people is causing the photo to show.
One of Randy's one leg is shorter than the other. So. Okay. We will adjourn for 10 minutes to come back at probably 11:35 and complete the admin portion of the meeting. Thank you.